You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, everyone. This is Mark Schaefer. Join me, Mitch Joel, Tom Webster, and so many others at this fall's Social Brand Forum in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Every person who attends will get a free copy of my new book, The Content Code. Learn more and register now at socialbrandforum.com. Can't wait to see you there.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Mike Volpe. Mike is Chief Marketing Officer at HubSpot, a marketing and sales software company, where he leads the company's lead generation and branding strategy through inbound marketing, including blogging, search engine optimization, video marketing, and social media. Since Mike has joined HubSpot, the company has grown from 10 to 13,000 customers, from 5 to 800 employees, surpassed $100 million in annual revenue, and completed a successful IPO leading to a valuation of over $1 billion. Under Mike's leadership, HubSpot's marketing has won more than 30 awards, been featured in over 20 marketing and business books, and generated over 2 million inbound leads. Mike also hosts The Growth Show, a top 10 business podcast that interviews C-level executives about how they grew their business. Mike holds an MBA from MIT Sloan and a BA from Bowdoin College and appears frequently as a marketing speaker. Mike, welcome to On Brand.
Thanks a ton for having me. This is going to be fun.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. You know, I think it's neat. You know, there's the obvious theme in everything there that is on the subject of growth. And as your bio notes, you know, since HubSpot was just a few customers and a few employees, the brand has really grown up along the way as well. What would you chart as some of the key milestones along that journey?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. I remember when I first showed up at the company, it was two co-founders and just two software developers. And, we got no web traffic. And I would call up somewhere and need to, you know, order something for the office. I'd be like, oh, yeah, the mailing address is HubSpot. And they're like, Hotspot? Right? And now, you know, like, what's no? You'd like spell it out like three times. And now, you know, in the outside world, not, you know, the normal world, not everyone's heard of it. But within marketers, especially demand generation, like B2B marketers, a lot of people have heard of the company now. So there's been a kind of a lot of steps along the way. I think, you know, some of the early ones were when we started to really see a fair amount of traffic on our blog. That was one. So maybe kind of when we passed, you know, first 100,000 visitors in the blog, and we recently built that up a lot, and we're over 2 million visitors to our blog every month now. That's probably been kind of like one really interesting arc in kind of our brand building. And then I think another interesting arc, too, is our events. So we have a conference. It's much more of an industry conference. It's not a HubSpot user group. We call it Inbound. And, you know, we first ran an event, in 2008. We had like 300 people show up. And last year for our Inbound conference, we had over 10,000 people. So I think that's kind of another interesting arc that sort of followed the kind of brand growth of the company, which has been, you know, really, really fun to watch and just very flattering and very humbling to be a part of.
It's interesting. You talk about the early days and being with HubSpot, Hotspot or whatever, in terms of people at that time not knowing the name. But I think another interesting thing that you've done with naming and words that you kind of hinted at with the event was really kind of the ownership of the concept of inbound marketing. I mean, I think of inbound as an approach, but also something that is very closely identified with the HubSpot brand.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think, you know, when we started the company, we really wanted to have something that was bigger than just the company and create sort of a movement that we were a part of. And I think you're seeing more and more of this sort of happening now in sort of this digital age that we're in. And that's what we're trying to do. And so, our co-founders wrote a book called Inbound Marketing. We talked a lot about the concept. It's the name of our event. And there's a lot of things we do that we try to make it about more than just the people that are paying us money. In some ways, it's about thought leadership and helping to move kind of our industry forward and talk about some new ideas and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's interesting. And we were very deliberate that we did not trademark that term. And we wanted it to be something that, yes, we were promoting it, we were pushing it a lot, but it was not something where we really expected that we wanted to own it. So competitors use the term sometimes, tons of agencies and other thought leaders, other bloggers, other people do content, things like that, they use the term. And we're totally fine with that. I think the playbook for a technology company or a software company 10 or 20 years ago might have been to come up with some new terminology and then try to trademark it. But we really feel like that kind of limits your growth, and it means that the movement is going to be a subset of your customer base as opposed to your customer base being a subset of a much broader movement. And that's the way we approached it. And I think that there's a lot of things that have changed the world that make that a really interesting way to go these days.
Well, yeah. I mean, you kind of, in software terminology, you kind of kept the concept open source a little bit so people are able to grab it and work with it as opposed to against it or creating alternatives.
Yeah, I think that's right, and that's sort of a good point. You know, if you have a new concept and you trademark it, then you're basically making it, you know, the opposite of open source, right? And you're totally right. By keeping it more open and allowing other people to sort of glom on and sort of be part of the movement, you can make it something that's much, much larger. And you're right. You know, in the software world, a lot of people have an open source product, and only a subset of the people using that open source product will actually pay the money. But it means that they have a lot of growth because they have all these people that are getting exposed to something at a very low cost. That's kind of a similar thing here. It's kind of a, you know, an open source thought leadership maybe.
Okay, so I'm the hotspot person that is still I'm not personally, but say I am, and I then my next natural question is going to be, so what's inbound? So what is the kind of company line for someone that may not be familiar with the concept of inbound marketing? What's the person off the street explanation?
Yeah, so the person off the street explanation is, you know, you probably don't like receiving spam emails or cold calls or getting a lot of direct mail, and that stuff probably doesn't work nearly as well as it does because you have a lot of technology to block it out now between caller ID and spam filters and fast-forwarding through ads in your DVR. But you're still buying things, and how are you finding those companies? You know, you're not waiting for them to cold call you. You're in Google, you're searching for them, you're asking your friends in social media for recommendations of products, you're surfing around the internet trying to find things. And so inbound marketing is doing all the things to make it more easy for your company to get found by the people that are looking for things related to what you sell, rather than trying to interrupt people through their daily life. And so we really feel like what the fundamental thing that's happened is buyers have so much more power today. And they've really changed their buying habits and their media consumption habits. And we don't think a lot of companies have really changed how they do marketing or how they do sales. And we think we're, you know, still, you know, the people in this inbound movement are still at the forefront of those changes. So that's what it's all about. And it's been a fun thing to be a part of.
So in thinking about that, you know, that kind of key tenet of the definition being, you know, being easier to be found by the people that are looking for you. You said that. What are the brand implications that go along with that?
Yeah, you know, that's really interesting. It's like before, you know, earlier today when I knew I'd be talking to you to now, I was thinking about that a lot. And I think it's really interesting because I think that it really changes the focus. Or if you think of that mix of you know, paid, owned, and earned media, I think one of the things that's starting to happen is that the importance of earned and especially the importance of owned is increasing a lot. And I would even argue that the importance of paid is potentially decreasing a fair amount. And so I think the way people are getting exposed to your brand is kind of in a whole new way. I think a lot more of it is happening peer-to-peer. So people asking their friends, that's always been true, but I think it's happening even more now because there's a lot of tools, you know, social media tools that accelerate that. I think the second thing is that, you know, it was pretty rare that companies would have their own, you know, print publication or their own radio station or their own TV station. But now, you know, here you are. You have your own radio station, right? I mean, this is what this is. This is a podcast. This is a modern radio station. People have modern television stations by having a channel on YouTube. People have modern, you know, publications by having a blog. And so I think people are getting exposed to the brands a lot more through owned and a lot more through earned media than they are through paid now. And I think that does change the dynamic a fair amount.
Yeah, it's funny because we always talk about, I always think of the, you know, the POEM acronym as being an older one. But when you walk it back a little bit, how much owned media did anyone have access to before? I mean, outside of maybe we write a company newsletter.
Yeah. No, I think you're totally right about that. I think it's, you know, I think some companies, you know, company newsletter, and I think even, you know, before that, you know, some, if you're talking about electronic, you know, some print publications, maybe with people, you know, some companies that sound like a quarterly magazine or something like that. But you're totally right. I mean, the internet has created this explosion in accessibility of publishing, right? And there's a dynamic of that, which is individuals, consumers, people publishing, but it's also the brands, right? And so so both of those things, I think, have really changed the relationship a lot. And people talk about, you know, the social media side of it. People talk about sort of the change in the buyer behavior. But I think the change in the company behavior in terms of being much more of a publisher and doing a lot more of sort of the owned media, I think that's something that maybe doesn't get talked about as much as it should.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of seems we talk about it as all of these big letters in an acronym, but I think that, like you said, it seems like it used to be a really big P of the paid and then owned earned media, kind of smaller, quieter. But now it definitely seems like it's a much more even mix, or to the degree that you said, even paid maybe decreasing. You know, you talk about that kind of label, that broad movement of inbound. And another person, another voice I get in my head after the one off the street that, you know, wanted the elevator pitch would be the famous devil's advocate that's in everyone's boardroom that says, you know, if we put this one label over our entire brand, then it's going to confine us. Then we won't be able to do X or Y. Is there ever that concern that with that kind of singular focus that it is confining at all?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, because everyone sort of, you say inbound, you're like, okay, well, you make up in your head, what's the opposite of that? Outbound. Does that mean you don't do outbound if I wanted to, right? And people say, oh, does that mean I needed a whole other product? So I need to do some other software to do these other things? Or, you know, and you get some sort of crazy conclusions like that. But yeah, in the early days, for sure, I think there were some concerns with that, even at the board level at HubSpot, some level of concern there. I think we had some of our own concerns as well. But I think, you know, you talk to a lot of people on these types of topics. I think anytime any good brand has some limitations to it. And I think one of the things that we found in particular was that by focusing on inbound, we had an opportunity to basically state our opinion to the world. And we knew everyone wouldn't agree with us. But having an opinion that was a little bit sort of controversial, I think made it more of a debate and made it a little bit more sort of a, it attracted more attention to it, I think is really what it did. I think if you have one of those things that just like everything sounds good, how could anyone disagree with this? It covers all the possible, you know, brand implications and use cases and things like that. Then it's just not interesting to talk about because it becomes so watered down. This is, you know, and especially in the early days where inbound was brand new, you know, a lot of people were like, you know, you guys are crazy. You can't build a business that way. And we said, nope, you're wrong. And here's why. And here's all the reasons. And here's what we're going to do. And blah, 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 blah. And I think that having the ability to have, you know, more of an opinionated view of the world created a lot of debate. And I think that attracted a lot of attention to us.
Well, it makes me think back to guest one on this show, who's Patrick Hanlon, who wrote a book called Primal Branding. And one of the things he talks about there is exactly what you said, that, you know, you're defined as much as a brand by what you aren't versus what you are. So I think drawing that clear line, like you said, starting that debate, starting that conversation is something much more interesting to pay attention to than you know, brands that, and there's many out there that get overcommitted and are a little bit of everything to everyone.
And I think if you were to ask people, I think you're just right about that. I think if you were to ask people about other marketing software companies and you were to say their name and then ask people, like, what does that company mean to you? I think the response back you would get would be a lot mushier. Whereas I think people would say HubSpot, they mean inbound, here's what they stand for, here's what they are. And I think it'd be a lot clearer. And not everyone would like it, but the people that like it would be supremely passionate about it. Like, I think if you look at the people that follow HubSpot, are part of our community, you come to our events and things like that, they are passionate. I think anyone that's been to our inbound conference knows the passion that that audience has. And I think that comes from that sort of, you know, that primal branding that you were just talking about, where we're not all things to all people. We have an opinion. And then I think when, you know, it's not just like, oh yeah, they're fine, they're sort of like whatever. This is like people like, no, this is like who they are. And some people hate us, but a lot of people love us. And I think that comes from this taking a stand on something.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're sitting here on a podcast, a form of own media. We're talking about kind of branded words, labels, and I'm a huge fan of other podcasts out there. And of course, The Growth Show comes to mind as well. But I'm actually getting ready to give a talk later this evening about podcast branding. And we're talking about things inbound, and you ask about HubSpot, and that's what you are. Was it hard in terms of focusing this podcast for you know, what? How did, basically, I guess what I'm asking is how the label of The Growth Show came about for the podcast?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, for us, we've got a couple really popular blogs. We have our marketing blog. We have a sales blog that we write. All those are sort of at blog.hubspot.com. There's another blog just for marketing agencies called The Agency Post that we have. And so we have kind of the blogging thing covered. As we've started to grow, what we realized was there's an additional audience, another sort of buyer persona that we wanted to connect with, and that was executives. You know, we started with just marketing software starting about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. We added a CRM system. We have some other sales software that we sell. So we're starting to sell to multiple departments within a company. And we said, you know what? It'd be great if those two buyers, if their boss was also someone who had a good relationship with us. And we have an okay relationship with that person, but we don't have the right content to connect with an executive audience. And then we said, okay, well, what's the right format for that? They're probably a little bit further along in their career, probably more likely to have a family, more likely to have a longer commute. You know, we did a little bit of research, felt like they were probably listening to podcasts more and more. A lot of the changes that have been made in podcasting technology for the past couple of years makes it easier for people to subscribe now. And we said, you know what? Podcast is the right way to connect with executives. So that kind of led us to the podcast. And then we said, okay, well, if it's an executive audience, you know, and it's on issues of not only marketing, but also sales, leadership, you know, management, vision, strategy, things like that. It's actually a little bigger maybe than the concept of inbound. And we really felt like it kind of boiled down to this topic of growth. And so that's really where all that sort of came from. And it's been, you know, like you said, it's been going well so far. The podcasting stuff is supremely exciting. I also feel like it's a little bit harder because you get fewer metrics, or at least fewer reliable metrics than you do from blogging or a bunch of other techniques, which I just find sort of fascinating.
You know, that is interesting because that's a slide I have, and it does seem a little bit like a rewind because all of our metrics everywhere else are so sophisticated. You can talk about, you know, I think you cited it to my first question about the growth of the HubSpot brand, and you cite these great marketing metrics that we have. And really, with podcasts, we're looking at downloads. I mean, what's on your radar for?
You're absolutely right. I mean, and downloads, and that number is even not really reliable because some of those downloads are streams. Some of them are downloads. Maybe the file wasn't listened to. Like, there's about, and like, how much of the file did they stream or how much did they listen to? Like, it's really hard to get good data on podcasting. But you're right. I feel like most of branding today, you can get far better data than you could, you know, 10 or 20 years ago, which I personally find very exciting because I'm more from the data-driven side of marketing myself. So I think that stuff is interesting. But yeah, the only other metric that we track is we also have an email list of people that subscribe to the show. So if they want to get notifications about new episodes, be able to get some idea of what the future guests are going to look like, we kind of, you know, send them a little bit of special stuff. So we also have the number of subscriptions to that email list. But other than that, it's really hard, aside from more qualitative information, to have any real sense of how the podcast is actually affecting your brand.
Yeah, no, that's I have to think that something has to be on the way. I know Edison Research has talked about putting together some sort of a metric around that too.
Yeah, it'd be good to have. I think it would help the podcasting industry kind of take a couple steps forward. I think a lot more brands would use it. And I think it's a really powerful tool, and I think, you know, I think most brands should be really thinking about it.
Well, you know, the other thing I wanted to capture before we kind of geeked out on the lack of podcasting numbers was the, you know, me asking how you arrived at your brand decision on the podcast. And the really sounds like you did some good old-fashioned smart marketing homework that I think so often we miss today, especially if podcasting's a great example. Oh, podcasting's big now. Time to do one of those.
Right.
And yeah. Everything that you just listed was, you know, in terms of the show name, the focus, the topics, the audience, all of those things that, you know, I think sometimes we get squishy with our branding and our marketing, and, you know, without that background done, that foundation, anything that we put up over it isn't going to stand.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's one of those things where you need to align all the techniques that you're using, all the tactics that you're using, with your overall business strategy. And I think too often people say, oh, shiny new object. We need a MySpace strategy. You know, we need a Facebook strategy. We need a LinkedIn strategy. We need a podcasting strategy. And the reality is, the podcast for us is part of our business strategy, right? And it was, you know, we just selected podcasting as the right technique for that audience for that purpose, right? But if we wanted to do something else with that audience, we had a different goal, we might do something else. If it was for a different audience, we might pick a different technique. So to us, it was much less about, oh, it's time to do podcasting. It was much more well, for this audience, oh, we know about podcasting. That could be the right thing to apply in this situation. So I think that that's the way brands need to think about it. And, you know, maybe it's Instagram, maybe it's blogging, maybe it's something else. Who knows? But I think you're right. I think too many brands just, you know, there's some buzzword that comes out and they feel like they have to go do it.
Yeah, yeah. And I think, you know, it's only, I mean, that's one thing that's getting harder with all of this is all of the parody of all of the marketing out there, you know, whether it's blog content, podcasts. I mean, you know, as we've all turned the content engines up to 11, at some point we're going to run out of impressions and eyeballs and everything else.
Well, I do think that when people think about their competition, everyone still thinks about the person down the street that still makes the same widget as you make. And what you actually should be thinking about is who's targeting the same audience as you're targeting with media, with, you know, you're competing for their attention even more than their wallet today, in my opinion. And so, you know, for instance, for HubSpot, we think less about other marketing or other sales software companies as our competition. That's one dynamic of the competition, but we really think about people that are competing for those people's attention. And to some degree, it's the Wall Street Journal. It's the business section of the New York Times, to some degree, that is in some ways our competition, right? And so I definitely think it's one of the things, you're absolutely right, like the world has kind of changed there.
Yeah, I mean, that's a really great point, too, in terms of the scale of all of this. It's not just about, you know, who else is, you know, across the street selling the same thing. That the real thing that is in short supply is attention span of our audience. And like you said, it's not just to make the other purchasing that you're fighting for budgets for. It's to get in front of them with some sort of helpful article each day.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, you know, for us, you know, with the Grow Show, you know, a CEO is driving to work and she could be listening to the Grow Show. She could be listening to this podcast. Or she could be listening to NPR, or she could be listening to Bloomberg Radio on satellite radio. She could be listening to a lot of different things, right? And so in many ways, we're competing with all those other information sources for her time and attention because, you know, with the budgets that most of these companies have and things like that, to be honest, the time is actually the more scarce resource. And you're absolutely right. It's, you know, people are, you know, buyers have sort of taken back their inboxes, their mailboxes, their voicemail boxes, you know, all these their TV watching and things like that through a variety of different technologies, keeping brands and advertisers out when they don't want them in. So you need to make sure that you're really earning their attention during that sliver or so, and earning their repeat attention and their engagement when they actually do let you in. I think it's really right what you're talking about.
So what's the answer then to a marketer, a brand builder out there struggling with that? Is it just better content? Is it better homework, combination thereof?
You know, in some way, I feel like I always tell people you need to think like Oprah, not like Ogilvy. And that's not totally right, because Ogilvy actually was a great storyteller who's really good at cutting to like the core of something and that part of it. But the real point is you need to think like somebody who's in the media, not somebody who's an advertiser, not somebody who's a marketer, right? And so think about what is going to be engaging to your audience. You know, when we sit down to make a show for the Grow Show, we don't sit down and say, hey, we're launching this new product feature. Who would be a good guest to have on to talk about something related to that so we can mention it during the show? That's not how we think. We sit down and we say, oh, this whole thing with Periscope and Meerkat is really hot right now. Why don't we see if we can get the founder of one of those companies on to talk about online video and real-time streaming and how they grew the company? Like, that would be really cool. Our listeners would really enjoy hearing that. Oh, and I don't know, eventually we'll figure out how to sell some software. But the most important thing is that we engage that audience and keep them coming back. And if you think about it from that perspective, you know, that's why, you know, the Oprah versus Ogilvy thing, you really need to think like somebody you're much more in the media. And I think that's where a lot of brands kind of, you know, miss the mark.
Yeah, the like the Ogilvy comparison. But like you said, he is a great storyteller, but his name really fits that comparison better. The Oprah.
Well, yeah, and they both begin with O, so you get the whole alliteration thing too. It's the best I've come up with. I'm open to suggestions.
I was gonna say it's good. I see what you're going for. But that's also, you know, like you mentioned, that when you've got that executive's time and competing with NPR, and that's why, you know, in talking about just podcasting alone, I don't think if you're, you know, thinking about getting into the space that you're well served by, I'm going to go find all of the podcasts, you know, all of the marketing podcasts and listen to those to get a snapshot of what else is out there. Because I think you have to listen to, especially in terms of all of the, you know, the great storytelling, production values, the entertainment factor of all the great podcasts out there that, you know, we need to be cognizant of if we're going to stand out.
Yeah, I think that's right. Again, you know, you're competing for people's time, and that's really the valuable resource. So those are the things you need to be scanning and understanding that that's what you're competing with.
You know, I told you earlier before we started that as we start to wrap up, I always ask for a brand that's made you smile. And I think of this because on the day that we're talking here, June 15th, an episode went live with author Martha Pease, who wrote a book called Think Round. And the brand that made her smile was HubSpot. And in particular, it was a touch point that I'm sure many listening are familiar with. And that would be your ebook, your SlideShare on company culture.
Mm.
And I think that, I mean, I love that because I see very little daylight between something like that and what we talk about here each week. And that, of course, being the brand. And I think that oftentimes we put a lot of daylight between those and that, oh, that's this HR culture thing and we're branding and marketing over here. And I think that that's a disservice to all of the above. So what do you see as the role that culture plays in brand building at HubSpot?
I mean, it is one of the core aspects to brand building here. I think what people need to remember is that no longer can you come up with the brand in some marketing conference room and then have an agency come up with a 30-second spot that gets signed off by the CMO, and then that is your representation of the brand of the world. You know, we have like 900 employees now. Every single one of them, in all their interactions all day long, and I don't just mean phone and email, I mean Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn and Twitter and all those things, they're bringing our brand to the world. And so unless you have people in the building at the company that represent your brand based on who they are, then you're really going to fall down because something is going to happen. Somebody's going to do something wrong or say something that's sort of, you know, off brand, not in keeping with what you're doing. You just can't control it all anymore. The idea of control is basically gone. So you basically need to hire great people and teach them the right way to do things and then trust them to use good judgment. And so culture for us has been one of the real core things to our growth. It's a huge important part of the brand. It's also a huge important part of just having great customer service and being very customer-centric, all those things. But it's a huge important part of the brand. And we started thinking about and talking about and spending time on our culture, even at an early stage at 30, 40, 50 employees, years and years and years ago, because we knew it would be so critical. So, yeah, so that it's really interesting. And we've been really public about it, too. So folks want to see, we call it the HubSpot Culture Code. There's a SlideShare presentation with, I think, over 1.5 or 1.6 million views now. If you go to culturecode.com, that takes you to a blog article that we wrote about it with the SlideShares embedded right there if you want to see you know, what you were just talking about. But yeah, we had a lot of really positive feedback on that. And we think that part of our specialness and part of our brand is actually wrapped up in the employees and the great people we have here. One of the things that customers always talk about is the reasons why they love HubSpot. Is their interactions with the HubSpotters, with the actual people that work here. And again, you know, we're software. There's nothing that you can see and feel and touch except for the employees. And we get a lot of really positive feedback. And that's all because of the culture and the people that we attract and retain here.
I love the saying of that your people are the ones who bring your brand to the world. And I think that that disconnect that so often happens between employees, the, quote, culture stuff, and the branding and marketing is missing a huge opportunity there, especially, I think we spend so much time on what can go wrong with this microphone that our people now have through social media, through all these different outlets and channels, that great things are missed, like everything you talk about in the culture code.
Yeah, very few companies, to your point, are looking at what could go right. And if you do it well, you can get so many things can go right, you know?
Well, I also think, you know, I'm reminded, you know, you've been, HubSpot's been a generous sponsor of the Social Brand Forum here in Iowa all the years that that we've done it. And I think about Laura Fitton, who's speaking at our conference again this year, and when she spoke a couple of years ago, that she talked about the concept that I remember also seeing at Inbound of I believe the word was delightion. And I think that not only our employees, but also customers as well, we spend time to the 10th power on what could go wrong instead of any time on how we can build up those great brand ambassadors, those happy customers as well.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. I think that you're much better off focusing on the positives, figuring out what are the things you can do to take all the changes that are happening in the world and use them to your advantage. You know, anytime a new technology or anything comes out, there's a lot of people that say, oh, how do we prevent this? How do we stop this? How do we slow it down? How do we mitigate risk? The people that make the most advantage of those situations, the ones that actually turn around and say, you know what, let's forget about the way we were doing it. How do we take what's happening today in the world and use it to our advantage? And to me, that's wrapped up in all this. So it's having those brand advocates that are both employees and customers. It's taking this, you know, the opportunity to have much more owned media and becoming, as you know, much more of a publisher as a brand. And that's kind of core to the whole Inbound philosophy as well. I think it's all those things kind of wrapped up in one. There's changes happening in the world, yes. Look at it as an opportunity, not an obstacle.
Well, speaking of making customers happy, let's talk about something that has made you happy recently, and that is, of course, a brand that's made you smile recently.
Yeah, there were a number of ones I thought about. I think the example I'm going to go with is Tesla Motors. And yeah, so I'm a huge Elon Musk fan. I think that they have an amazing company. And I think there's two things they're doing really well. One is there's a number of viral videos about the latest car that they've put out. And, you know, it's just really, really fast. And even so fast, it has a button that says it's in an insane mode. So it's like insanely fast, literally. And there's a video that one of their customers put together of people riding in his car. Like, you pick somebody up and be like, oh, he kind of explains it. He sort of points where the insane button is, and then he hits the gas pedal as hard as he can. And and every single person, like, shrieks like an 8-year-old child. And it's hilarious. And he has, like, you know, a couple coworkers. He has, like, you know, an older woman. He has, like, some young kids in the backseat, like, all kinds of things. And it's like a 3 or 4 minute video, and it's got millions and millions of views. And to me, then that made me smile because the video was hilarious. But it also made me smile because all the big auto brands that are spending so much money on TV ads that I fast forward through my DVR. And here you have a customer, not even the company, a customer makes this video, uploads it to YouTube. The video is hilarious. It's awesome. And it's like millions and millions of views. And that, so it made me smile because the video is funny, because the brand's interesting. I'm a huge fan of the brand, but it also sort of underscores, like, everything that I think is happening in the world today. So I think that's really cool. You know, plus they're, I mean, you know, it's an awesome car. They build it right here in America, and it's sort of leading the revolution into electric cars. I just think it's great. It's awesome engineering and just so many things that I love about that brand.
Well, I love what you said too about it's kind of a good representation of so many things that you know, we all encounter day in and day out. And I mean, something as big as the automotive industry, which is, you know, lots of, you know, changes, but certainly it's been a slow moving industry. And if you look at something building from scratch of, you know, what if we didn't have those big, huge commercials and everything else, you know, what if we weren't starting where everyone else is?
Yeah, there's a guy named Joseph Jaffe that wrote a book called Zero, and it's, you know, it's like the basic premise of the book is, what if zero paid media was your goal? What would you do differently? And it's not necessarily you may not get there, but to think about it in that way, I think is a very interesting way to think about it. Right? Tesla has no TV ads, so it's like, what would you do if you had to build a car company with no TV ads? And I think it forces you to think about things differently, and I think it's at least a good, useful mental exercise.
Oh, yeah, because it's an amazing amount of inertia, because even if you're not one of the other big automakers, you know, we all get pulled into that's how we're supposed to do things. You know, we're supposed to hit this level and be buying, you know, more ads, that's, you know, representative of our success, as opposed to, you know, flipping things and thinking a little bit differently there.
Yeah, exactly right.
Well, where can folks go to learn more about you, what you're doing, the growth show, HubSpot, Inbound, everything in between?
Yeah, well, I mean, with the whole model, the question is, where can't they go? Right. But I'll point them to a couple of places. Obviously, the website is HubSpot.com, and there's a ton about the company there. You know, if you want to learn more about the culture, go to the career section, and there's a bunch of things there about culture and hiring and who we are. But there's tons of stuff there about the product. And then if you go to HubSpot.com/podcast, that's where you have a bunch of information about the growth show. And of course, you know, we're on all the social channels. The whole point of this stuff is, if you're looking for us, you should be able to find us quite easily. So we try to be everywhere that we can be. But yeah, we certainly love, you know, for those of your listeners that are customers, thank you so much for their business. And for those that are not, we hope we can someday delight you and make you smile.
Awesome. Well, Mike, thanks for joining us this week on Brand.
Thanks for having me. It was a lot of fun.
And before we go, as always, I want to flip the microphone around to our listeners. Luis Sands took the time to give us a holler on Twitter and applaud our episode featuring Ian Greenlee. So big thanks, Luis, for listening. And reminder, if you heard something that you liked on this show or another, or if you have a question you'd like one of our guests to answer, you can tweet at us using the hashtag OnBrandPodcast, and you may just hear your thoughts right here on the show. Last but not least, you can find links to everything Mike and I talked about at branddrivendigital.com. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, RSS, Stitcher, and more. Speaking of iTunes, it's a great reminder to hop over, give both this show and The Growth Show a rating and review, help others find the podcasts. And don't forget that this is brought to you by the industry-leading Social Brand Forum, sponsored by our good friends at HubSpot. You can learn more and register now for this premier digital marketing experience at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.